That's not a good sign, though. She's like,
I know. You're telling me.
You gotta make this work, girl.
Joint City Council. December 9, 2011.
We
all become your best friends. Trust me, we have the power.
All right, let's hear.
Basically, try and hear everything else is important. Keep in mind, when you activate it, you have to make sure the plate number is not your last, not your last, not the last word. Have questions on any of the policies?
Susie, you nominated to the executive board of the Georgia Army last night.
No.
They only have.
Who nominated you? I don't know.
They only have one meeting a year. And I asked them if you were kind of a regular attender of the meetings, and they said yes. Is that correct or not? I asked them if you were a regular attender of the WRP. Yeah, so that was the only reason that I didn't make you a board member. And I've decided that being on the nominating committee is the way to go. Good morning, Tim.
I want to start by thanking the new city council member who kind of got this meeting started and got the ball rolling for us to all be here today. So we thank you very much. And if we would go around the room and just introduce ourselves and who we're representing. And I'll start with myself. I'm Susie Kofflin with the Ocala City Council.
Sam McLean, Marion County Commission.
Mary Rich, Ocala City Council.
Mike Amsden, Marion County Commission.
Carl Ballas, Marion County Commission.
Gary Air, Commission.
David Ellsworth, Marion County Clerk of the Court.
Good morning, Matthew Rauer, City Manager, Ocala.
Lee Niblock, County Administrator.
Christine Nikoski, City of Albion.
Guy Mentor, Marion County Attorney.
John McLeod, Ocala City Council.
Kathy Bryant, Marion County Commission.
Daniel Owen, Ocala City Council.
Charlie Stahl, Marion County Commission.
Thank you all. And I want to welcome Joe Meath, who is a Citrus County Commissioner. And he's also brought with him from Citrus County, Brad Dorf. We want to welcome y'all to Marion County. And I understand you have a presentation for us.
Yes, ma'am.
Please feel free to.
We're ready? All right.
Well, first of all, good morning, everybody. My name is Joe Meek. I am a Citrus County Commissioner and also the President of the Economic Development Council in Citrus County. And first and foremost, we want to say thank you very, very much, Commissioners, Council members, and members of Marion County and the City of Ocala. We are so excited to be with you all today and to talk about the opportunities and the possibilities that are before us with regards to trying to work to improve our economic situation in our communities. And so, thank you very much. I want to briefly introduce some of the people that are here with me. As was said earlier, Brad Thorpe is our county administrator and also the port director. Brad will be giving you all a detailed presentation of our Port Citrus Initiative. Also, we have today County Attorney Richard Wesch, who is also the port attorney with us. I have Lindsay Ubias, who's the Citrus County Public Information Officer. John Seifert is the Executive Director of the Economic Development Council of Citrus County. And then Chase Daniels, Legislative Aide to Representative Jimmy Smith. And so we are very, very excited to be with you all. Again, what I'd like to take just a few minutes to try to do right now is Brad's going to get into the specifics of the project, but I'm going to hit on some of the bigger picture from a high altitude standpoint of really why we're here and what we're doing as a county. And hopefully what those opportunities And the possibilities are to start the discussion of working with you all as a community to make a positive impact on our economy. And that's what we're here, the opportunity to work together to utilize the strengths that we feel that Citrus County has, and we recognize that the city of Ocala and that Marion County has, to try to improve our situation. And the goal, obviously, is to create an environment in our region and in our counties that encourages private investment, that encourages businesses to thrive in our community. And so we're working hard to do that. I want to start off by recognizing the hard work that both the city and the county have undertaken over the last few years. John Seifert and myself often talk about and follow a lot of the things that you all have been doing with regards to a lot of the economic initiatives. And we want to basically applaud you all for the proactive stances that you all have taken in both the city and the county to address that situation. You've been on the cutting edge of a lot of initiatives that we followed very closely. We look forward to hearing some of the things that you all have been doing and congratulate you for taking that proactive stance. We see a lot of similarities between our communities with regards to the county, to Citrus County and you all with our economic situation. In Citrus County specifically, we have been a single industry marketplace, heavily reliant for years on new construction and growth and development. And when that market has fallen on hard times, as it has right now and has been really for years, we're affected in Citrus County at a greater rate than those communities that have diversified their marketplace. Excuse me. And so we're working hard to have to do that in our community. And we've made some major changes in Citrus County I'd like to go over with you all just to make you aware of some of the things that we're doing. From an administrative standpoint in our county, we've had all new leadership in place from the county administrator, county attorney, our senior department directors, our new individuals, and they understand that we need to have a culture and an attitude in our community that works with the business community and that understands the importance of having policies in place that encourages investment into our county. At the same time, our commission has made major policy changes over the last 2 years, and they run the board of all types of different things, from the reduction and the elimination of a lot of impact fees, to a complete rewrite of our land development code, to modifications of our comprehensive plan. We've done a lot of things that we feel will hopefully have a positive impact on our marketplace. We've created redevelopment incentives in our county. We've created economic incentive programs. We have tax abatement grants. We have infrastructure assistance programs. We've created job creation grants. And those types of things that we feel will hopefully have a positive impact. We've also worked with a company called Stanford Research Institute, SRI. And we've done a comprehensive business analysis of our economy and looked for ways in which we can grow as a county and what are sectors that have the potential to have growth. And through that program, we've created a thing called targeted industry categories, areas in which we're going to concentrate on for investment by the private side. And they include the medical industry, agriculture-related businesses, marine-based activities, technology-based companies, power generation, and light manufacturing. And so we're trying to incentivize, through a whole host of different ways, investment into those areas and different programs that we've worked on. And we're having some success in that. But we're also aware that every one of the 67 counties in the state, and almost every city in the state, and every state in the nation is doing the same thing. And we're all talking about economic development and ways in which we can grow the economy. And so we've tried to take a little bit different of a look at it and look for ways in which ways that make us somewhat unique as a county. What are some things that we have somewhat of a competitive advantage over other counties, and we want to look as a region of ways in which we can be competitive, because quite honestly we're not going to be able to compete against the Hillsborough or Pinellas counties in some areas, nor do we want to, but we're going to try to utilize assets that we feel we have in our county. Some of those things that make us unique in Citrus County is our demographics. Prior to the latest census, and it's changed a little bit, but not much, we're the second oldest median age in the state of Florida, and we have one of the highest median ages in the United States. And so that presents some obstacles with regards to economic development, but it also presented us with some opportunities, one in which is growing our medical business. And so we're concentrating heavily with healthcare professionals and doctors to grow that industry in our community. Another unique asset in Citrus County is we're home to Progress Energy's large power complex. They actually have 5 plants in the northwest portion of our county, 1 nuclear and 4 coal-fired power plants. It's one of the largest power generating sites in the United States. And so we're looking, we're working closely with Progress Energy, soon to be Duke, on ways in which we can have industry and business that complement their operations. In other words, the nuts and bolts manufacturers, the computer software programmers. We have a good story to tell us why they should be in our county and in our region, quite frankly, and we're going after that. And finally, from a geographic location, we obviously have some advantages. And I'll just briefly hit on it, and Brad will get into the details of it. But obviously, we're located on the coast. The federal government invested $74 million in the 1960s and dug a barge canal 6.5 miles into our coast, northwest portion of our county. We have hundreds of acres of vacant property to the north of the canal, hundreds of acres to the south. We have industry that surrounds that barge canal that utilizes that barge canal right now. It is a functioning waterway. We have mining businesses to the north and to the south. We have power generation companies that surround it. We have timber businesses just to the north. Plum Creek, the largest landowner in the state of Florida, owns a substantial amount of property in Levy County, and they're moving forward with timber operations there. So we feel we have a lot of opportunity that surrounds that, and we feel that it's an underutilized asset. And Brad's going to get into that in some detail. But in addition to the things that I just mentioned, we've really put an emphasis over the last 2 years on trying to work as a region and trying to partner with other communities to have that positive impact and to try to utilize the strengths of other places. One of the ways in which we've done that is we've joined an economic group called the Tampa Bay Partnership, which is a regional economic development organization. We're the 8th county in that group. We're the northernmost county. And basically, that group works very hard to grow business and industry in our region, utilizing the assets of each of the counties. And one of the things that we're going to attempt to do, and what we need to do, is strengthen our relationship to the counties to the north and to the east of us. And that's why we're here today, to start that discussion about working with you all to grow our marketplace. And so today, hopefully, is the start of building a relationship that utilizes the strengths of both of our communities. And we feel we have a good story to tell. In Citrus County, we're home to 7 natural spring-fed rivers, Florida Outstanding Riverways. We've got a gorgeous lake system on the east side. We're heavy into quality of life issues. And we feel that's something that we can work with you all. In Marion County and City of Ocala, you have some fantastic places as well. You've got some great manufacturing industries and businesses. Obviously, I-75 runs right through you all, so you have a lot of opportunities that we don't have that we feel we can work with you all to try to capitalize on. We're going to look for ways to partner and to grow our region and to diversify our economy, and if nothing else comes from today, I think that starting the discussion of looking for ways to start that process of partnering is a huge step forward for our communities. And so we're very, very excited to have this discussion with you all. And to start the process of working together from a regional standpoint, utilizing our strengths as communities to grow and diversify our marketplace. And one of the ways in which we can start that discussion, we feel, and start that conversation is to look at our port initiative that you're going to hear about, and to try to work with you all with your inland port concept and have an open discussion about ways in which the opportunities and possibilities are out there. I'm going to be upfront and totally honest with you all. We are very early on in the process of our port initiative. We've got a long way to go. We have thresholds that have to be met in order for us to continue on with this process. But we want to make you aware of what we're doing, where we're at with that process, and where we're headed, and talk about some of the possibilities with you all that are in front of us today. So I know I've talked for a while now. Just wanted to give you all a brief broad overview of why we're here and how excited we are to have this discussion, and thank you all for the opportunity. It's really an honor and privilege for us to do that. So with that being said, if I can ask Mr. Thorpe to come up, he'll give you a presentation on our specific initiatives, and we are excited about it and again grateful for the opportunity. So thank you, folks.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here again on behalf of the whole board. I thank you for having us here. We appreciate the hospitality of the City of Ocala and Marion County. And you can tell our board members are not enthusiastic about this board. It's been a hard process for me to get them motivated. They're very excited because, as you all know, as elected officials, they've taken a chance. They've taken a chance and they've gone outside the boundaries and trying to make something happen. They haven't just sat on their ideas. They're trying to enact it. So I commend the whole board for that. I'm going to try to tell a story also about Port Citrus, getting a little bit in the weeds about what our current status is and what we've done and what the assets we have. I thought this would be interesting. I've been ribbed by my staff about this, but I laid on your table the schedule for the railroad between Ocala and Homosassa 100-plus years ago. So I guess what I want to tell you is we're back. You know, I just thought it was amazing. I received this in the mail the other day, and it shows you that we were connected, and we have been connected for over 100 years. And we were connected by rail. Using that. So I just thought that was real interesting. You know, some old ideas just never go away. So we're back. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Port Citrus. We'll start off by talking a little about the history of Port Citrus. And this is an aerial of basically a general description of the barge canal and the properties that surround that. I'll get a little bit more into detail, but just in general, you can see this specific area is in the northwest corner of Citrus County, and you can see the canal that's right there. And of course, this is the channel that leads out to the Gulf. This is the power generating facility, and they also have a canal that leads out. And these two connect about 4.5 miles off the coast. Believe it or not, a little history. In 1927, the Rivers and Harbors Act, the federal government created the initiative to build the cross-Florida barge canal, and this is the original concept, going to Palatka and hitting the southern end of St. John's River. In 1942, Congress proposed a cross-Florida barge canal and authorized its existence. Little old Citrus County back then, we had probably 20,000, maybe 15,000 residents. It was a big deal to us. This is the old Holiday Inn on US 19, and we're welcoming the Cross Florida Barge Canal and all their workers. This is a picture of the construction of the barge canal in the 60s, looking west from US 19. As you can imagine, back then, that was quite a big project for the federal government for Citrus County. This is the east end of the barge canal, about 6 miles in. This is the lock that used to work, and this goes to Lake Rusaw, which is connects to the Withlacoochee River, and this is the outfall for that connects to the lower end of the Withlacoochee River, so the water continues to stream down this and connect to the old Withlacoochee River that goes out to the Gulf. These locks are no longer in operation. This is kind of an interesting picture of the bridge that was constructed in the 70s, and just recently the bridge has just been dedicated, and there's two spans now, and they've been lowered a little bit. In 1971, the construction was halted because of environmental concerns and challenges to this, so Congress deauthorized this and stopped the construction. So this is the portion that was constructed from the Gulf to Lake Rusaw. And then on the other end, there was some work done at Palatka on St. John's River. One third of the canal was completed, and as Commissioner Meek had stated, about $74 million was spent of federal money. This is an historic day for Citrus County. On May 11th, Governor Scott signed House Bill 283, which amended Florida Statute 31109 to give Florida a competitive edge. Also, it included Port Citrus as the 15th port in the state of Florida through legislation. So once we count in the game, officially by the state legislature, we came the 15th port. This so happens to be Mr. Wayne, is the port director of Port Tampa, who's become a good friend of ours, and all of the port directors now are part of the FSTAB, which I'll explain in a few minutes. It's the organizational group for all of the port directors. Again, Port Citrus, this gives you kind of a map of where all the 15 ports are located around the peninsula of Florida. None of these ports are the same. They all do different things, haul different cargo, they're different depths. Some are being used a lot, some are being used very little. The big ports that probably you're familiar with is Port Manatee, Port Tampa. Of course, these ports are primarily into cruise ships, and of course, there's a lot of cargo being shipped out of Port Miami and Port Everglades. We're now a member of the Florida Seaport Transportation Economic Development Council. That's a word that you'll hear, FSTAT. This was created by the Florida Department of Transportation as an arm of the ports. And so we are created by statutes, and all of the port directors and staff sit on this board. And we usually meet at least once every other month. And so that's put us in kind of rarefied air as far as meeting with Port Tampa, Port Everglades. We've developed relationships with these board directors, understand what they're doing. We're in the game. The benefits of the membership is that we get access to state funding. There's an issue right now in the legislature to set the minimum funding for $15 million per year, but last year they spent $50 million on the 15 ports to develop their infrastructure and improve their technology. It provides technical support. It provides 50-50 matches for local port projects, and also it assists technically for us understanding what we have to do to make our port economically viable. FSTAT is supported by the Florida Ports Council. That's a not-for-profit group that actually provides the staff support for FSTAT, and they have an office in Tallahassee, Florida. Doug Wheeler is their CEO, and their staff meet with us frequently, help give us technical support. They've been guiding us through this process. They serve the 15 ports. They're kind of our eyes and ears in Tallahassee. And so we are in constant contact with them and their board of directors, which is the port directors. There are similar ports in the Big Bend area, and I wanted to show you what they were just in relationship to where Port Citrus is. You've got Port St. Joe, which is very similar. They have a canal that was dug many years ago. This was the big wood and timber distribution point. Again, that's kind of gone by the wayside, so it's fairly inactive. And then, of course, Port of Panama City. They are trying to decide what they want to be, kind of like what we are. They have the ability to be a large port, but again, they're in a close proximity of Panama City, so they have maybe some restrictions that we may not have. This is now looking at an aerial northwest of our Port Citrus study area. The barge canal runs from the Gulf, goes under US 19 right there. This land to the north, this is owned, this is a long-term lease agreement with CMX Mines. This property is owned by Citrus Mining and Timber, and this is 500 acres of industrial property. It's already been zoned industrial. This property is owned by Wholesome Mines. This is another 500 acres that is owned by a company, and they have a very small access onto the port. This property owner actually owns the center of the canal from this point to this point. This is an aerial view of what some of the assets we have for this canal. Again, this is the open mine that CMX owns. This is the Wholesome mine, the power plant property. This is US 19 and 98 to kind of give you a frame of reference. And then there's the bridge over the barge canal. And these are the two channels that lead into both canals. This barge canal channel is about 4 miles out. It connects to this channel that goes to the power plant. This channel is 24 feet deep. This channel is about 14 to 15 feet deep. The power plant currently gets coal barges that come from Mobile, Alabama. They offload the coal, and then Wholesome conveyors its aggregate back to the plant and backfills the barge. And the barge goes back out to Mobile. So already, this is being done right now. It's just done for Progress Energy. This is the port planning area. Again, I'm showing you the little cut for access to that side of the canal. And this is the private property that owns this waterfront from here to there. This is something that may be of interest to you and your communities. This is a piece of public property that's owned by the state of Florida, and Citrus County has entered into a draft agreement, lease agreement, to make that a public facility, a public boat ramp. This would be rather large, 16 acres. It would contain maybe the minimum of 200 parking spots. The vision of this would be direct access to the Gulf without going out the rivers and through the manatee protection zones. In our manatee protection plan, this is allowable. In our plan right now, we can never expand any of the boat ramps in Crystal River on our natural waterways. This is the only pop-off valve for a new boat ramp. And so people coming from Marin County that wanted to go to the Gulf could find this a convenient way to get to the Gulf directly. There's no idle zone here. There's also a proposal to move the Coast Guard station from Yankeetown to here, and they could bring their cutter in here because of the water depth. Right now, they're restricted doing that on the Winter Future River. So the proposal is put the Coast Guard station there and have their cutter sitting there instead of on the Winter Future River, which would be a big deal for all of us, especially when it comes to the port. This is the current facility. This is why I think we've got an edge up from a lot of other ports, and I'll explain that in a few minutes. This is the Marjorie Hare, Marjorie Carr Greenway Trail that runs from the Felburn Park out to the Gulf. This is available by foot or by bike. You can, there's a trailhead right here off US 19. You go underneath the bridges and you can ride your bike, and there's little lookouts along the way on the barge canal. This is of interest. This is the short line railroad, the Pensley line, that runs a rail spur from here to Newberry, Florida, and they bring in coal as a backup to their barge facility on railroad cars on a unit train, about 100 cars every 18 hours gets loaded with coal, and then when they leave empty. This is a smaller transmission line that runs from the power plant through this industrial property south. So power is a big, important commodity when it comes to industrial development, and as you can see, a transmission line is right there. Brand new bridge, brand new improvements right there, and again, I mentioned this property for public purpose. Two 36-inch diameter transmission lines are coming from Texas to South Florida to supply power plants in the South Florida region. These are high-pressure gas lines that run through this property, and believe it or not, they've been tunneled under the barge canal. Gas and power is important to industrial development, and gas is right there. Future infrastructure. There's the location of proposed nuclear power plants in Levy County. I mentioned the public boat ramp with possibly the Coast Guard being stationed there. There's a proposed water main extension that runs from our utility system up to serve this area, Yankeetown and Inglis potentially, and supply any potential properties or buildings that are located on this site. And of course, this is the proposed terminus of the Suncoast Parkway extension right at US 19. This is approximately 60% designed and permitted right now, but it's just not funded. Real quick, you've heard a lot of this. This is the post-Panamax economy. Obviously, this is to illustrate, and this again, this slide has been given to a lot of our residents of Citrus County to explain the importance of the widening of the Panama Canal. When this canal increases its capacity, it's going to affect all of the ports in the Gulf region. And I just wanted to show, to illustrate how important that is to all of us. This is the M10 Maritime Highway, which is the federal government interstate on the coast. This goes from Brownsville, Texas to Fort Manatee. The purpose of this is to hopefully interlock with all of these ports and have niches and supply in and out between all of these ports to take advantage of this post-Panamax economy. I'll get a little more specific about the canal. A lot of people can't see this when they're driving over the bridge. They look out, it just looks like a long canal. They don't realize that there's actually a key cut in this canal. It's 1,650 feet long. This canal is about 12 to 15 feet deep. The canal is 250 feet wide from water edge to water edge on mean tide height. Another description of this is, you don't realize the size of this, but this is roughly 250 feet wide, 1,650 feet long, and I'm showing this because this is currently where aggregate is being loaded onto barges in this little site. This is a view looking southwest of the Key Cut. We've been criticized, some people have criticized the fact that this barge canal can actually work as a functioning port. This picture was taken last month, and this is a tugboat loading two barges with aggregate, and these are large rocks that are going down to Manatee for a mitigation project. These barges and this tugboat have been taking trips down to Manatee for about 3 months, loading these large boulders from CEMEX mine to offshore from Manatee. People have said, well, you don't have the capacity at this canal because it's just not wide enough or deep enough. I wanted to show this picture to let you know that these barges hold 1,000 tons apiece, which is 2 million pounds per barge. They draw about 11 feet fully loaded. This tugboat, its draft is 14 feet, and there is an individual right there. And this is currently located in the Key Cut. Again, this is a barge that's getting ready to be loaded, and there is an individual right there to give you a scale of the size of this canal. It's very deceiving. We've had some issues about whether the existence of recreational activity can exist through the barge. I put this slide in to show you the size of this canal. This tugboat's going with two fully loaded barges, and there's a recreational boater going on the side of it. Again, the concept is you'd use barges for this canal because it's not going to take a cruise ship. It's not going to take what we think of as ocean liners. It's going to be primarily a niche port using barges as a means of transportation. I wanted to put this slide in to prove to you that barges can hold container ships. Containers, this is a 400-foot barge, 105 feet long, and it has about 800 TEUs, which is transportation equivalent units, which is basically a container 20 foot by 8 foot by 8 foot 6 inches. This is also a conceptual container ship barge. This is 440 feet long. The beam is 85 feet wide, and look at its transit draft is about 11 feet. Currently, what we've got to do is, now that we're official port, we have 2 years to do a feasibility study to prove that we can exist, and we get to stay in the game. In the feasibility study, we were given $50,000 from FSTAT as a match. We've matched another $50,000 from Citrus County, $42,000 of it coming from the EDC, Workforce Development Board, and private contributions. And now this study is out on the market. And the purpose of this study is to do a market assessment, job creation, the capacity of the port, how we connect intermodally the current and future facilities. This study is due back January 20th. And trust me, around the street, we've been contacted by large firms that do port studies and port development. And we expect a very active participation in this study. We have a pre-bid conference scheduled for January 8th. And these companies will come and talk to us about what they expect from Citrus County. We will do a selection sometime in the first quarter of next year, and the Port Authority will do that. Again, just to show you the money that's available for ports, I put this in here because little old Citrus County got $50,000, but you can see the money that's coming into some of the larger ports. Port Canaveral, $3.2 million. Port Tampa, $4.4 million. So they're serious about their ports. We've amended the chapter to include Port Citrus. We've reconvened the Port Authority. Believe it or not, back in 84, there was an initiative to put a private marina on the barge canal. Because of that, the legislature, through a special act, created a Port Authority, which is the Board of County Commissioners. So they currently sit as the Port Authority, and I'm the Port Director. This is not unusual. All ports in the state of Florida, most of them are connected with county or city governments, and many of the ports, like Fort Manatee, their board of directors is the board of county commissioners. So this is not an unusual model. We're now members of the Florida Ports Council, and now we're looking for our RFQ for our feasibility study. What we'll do is we'll select the number one firm, and then we'll negotiate with that firm to do the study. Some people have said these studies are not specific. I wanted to show you the current feasibility study, or the port study of Port St. Joe, just to show you what the potential job creation is based on the volume of cargo that comes through a port. So there is a scientific method to determining what kind of job creation a port can do and what kind of average wage there can be. The potential port development model for Citrus County is we don't own a bit of public land on that barge canal. So what we would have to do is to identify where this port would be, develop a long-term lease with a private property owner, have a port developer come in with private capital, develop a port, and then the revenue developed from that port activity would be paid out to the various parties that were in this agreement. Typically, ports distribute their funds, some to the Port Authority, which is a very small amount for administration and overseeing the operations. The port developer, or the operator of it, will get his return on investment based on the goods and services and the land leases on that fort. And of course, the property owner, whoever they are, will get a return on their investment as a long-term lease. Port Authority, they budget, develop, they use those funds for port activities like security and infrastructure improvements. I think the revenue from Port Everglades, or Port, I think Port Everglades last year was about $143 million for Port Authority revenue. So we're talking large money. Of course, those ports, they go anywhere from security and parking and cruise ships, tariffs, and all of those other activities in developing their ports. I've added this into our slide to show that one of the intermodal connections is rail. And I think this is where we and the inland port in Marion and Ocala are very important, because as you can see, the rail lines are very interested in trying to connect intermodally to these, to the inland port and Port Citrus. The way I would envision this, and I hope the port study will prove it, and I think it will, is that we would be an asset for your inland port. That if a shipper needed to use water as a way to transport, there would be a connectivity between the port and this inland port. And as you can see right now, this Pensley line that's running to the power plant site currently goes up to Newberry, but it doesn't take very long to figure out these are all connected to CSX Railroad, which goes to Jacksonville. So that's why it's important. I've added again, this is the Ocala Marion County Commerce Park. We love you. We really do. We feel that we do not want to compete. We want to be part of an asset to whatever happens here, because if these companies need to either export or import goods and services, we've got to find a way to make sure there's a convenient link between this and a waterside port. And that's really why we're here. We think we need to look north. I've conveniently done the setting sun, and the barge is heading on out for its last load, and now I'm going to conclude and be available for any questions. Again, I want to tell you how much I appreciate you having us here, and I think it's a future's bright. We've got a long way to go, like Mr. Meekitz said. There's a lot of unanswered questions, but I think it's been less than a year since we started this project, and I think we've come a long way, and I've learned an awful lot about ports. I want to say something about Mr. Wayneo in Tampa. It was interesting. At one time, we thought all these ports compete, and Tampa wants to keep theirs, and Manatee wants to keep theirs, and we don't want to work together. The whole Ports Council is starting to realize Florida benefits if we all work together. And to show you that, Mr. Wayneo made the motion to support our $50,000 allocation for this port. So they realize how important all these ports are to work together. And we've got to work as a team in Florida and not just be compartmentalized. And that's why we're here to work with you, because we think we can add to yours and we can benefit from your initiative. So thank you very much.
Are there any questions?
Yes?
Red, how long do you think that feasibility study will take you to complete?
I'm looking to have it, someone selected by the first quarter of next year. We have 2 years to get it done, so I would hope it would be within next year. I'm hoping it'll be next year. Again, it'll be based on scope of work. Again, it's going to, the art of this is trying to decide what kind of scope of work. One of the advantages we have of this study, we don't need to dig. We don't need to drill or dredge. We need to figure out what kind of port this could be. If you started from scratch, you'd have, you know, we visited Port Manatee. It told them, they said it would take between 15 and 20 years to get a permit from the Army Corps of Engineers to start a port from scratch. So that's an advantage we have. We already have facilities there.
What is the legislature requirement for receiving permanent port status?
Say it one more time.
What is the legislature's requirements for giving you permanent port status?
Right now we are a permanent port. But the requirement legislatively is to have this feasibility study and say that it will be successful or it is a viable port within 2 years. So to stay in the game, we've got to have a study that comes back and says we're viable. Now, I will give you a hint. We're already using it. So it's just a matter of quantifying that, in my opinion. If we were starting from scratch and this tugboat and these barges weren't being used, I would say we'd have a harder task ahead of us. It's mostly quantifying what capacities and what kind of market we have. But as you can see from that picture, it's currently being used.
Yes. Greg, can you speak a little bit? You and I spoke before.
Yep.
about the environmental concerns. I asked that question once before, and he has some really good answers on it.
Good, good. Well, the first thing's the manatee. As you know, Citrus County was one of the leaders in the manatee protection plan, mm-hmm. and one of the issues is manatees, you know. And I want to tell you, in our plan, it prescribes that the barge canal is the only spot that is not a habitat-sensitive area for manatees. So that's why we're allowed to put that boat ramp there. As I said in my presentation, there in our manatee plan, we cannot expand any boat ramps in Citrus County ever again, and this is the only spot that we can do that. We do not plan on making this any deeper. When we develop the scope of work, we're expecting this would come back with the current depths that are there. The only thing that would be done is any maintenance work. In other words, there are some silted-in spots along this canal over time, over 40 or 50 years, that have just silted in a little bit at the mouth. The only thing that we would expect is that we'd have to work on the siltation of this canal and have to do maintenance. And that's where the Army Corps comes in, and that's where it's important to be part of a port system, because there is federal money that's available to maintain ports. Every port in the United States pays a fee from the cargo capacity they have into a federal bucket of money. And that money's used to maintain our ports. Now, I will tell you, federally, they haven't spent the money. And that's one of the big issues around the country of trying to get ourselves out of this sad state in our economy, is these ports need to be started to be maintained. And so, right now, as we speak, Miami is trying to do a dredge project to dredge their port to 50 feet. It's a $50 million project, and it was held up based on environmental concerns. What, 2 weeks ago, we were visiting down there, and they've held that project up, but they're trying to dredge their port to take bigger container ships. But in answer to your question, I don't think we do not plan on altering that physically to get into the aquifer or go any deeper with that. The property surrounding that is currently zoned industrial or extractive. So again, that property can be used for industrial purposes as it sits right now. So we don't plan another big advantage from other ports.
And we're talking barges.
Barges, yes. Primarily barges, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Torres. I have a couple of questions. Number one, you mentioned the locks are no longer in service.
Yes, sir.
What's going to happen, if anything at all, with the locks?
Well, it's like anything with money. There's been some initiatives to change that into a reservoir for fresh water, to take them out. There's been no action taken, and Citrus County really has not been involved in that, because it's really, I think it's owned by the state of Florida. So we haven't done anything with that, but I know there are some proposals to use that lock. So right now they're inactive. They used to work. They used to work, you know, maybe 5 years ago. You ring a bell and the lock master would come out and you take your boat out there, but I don't think it's being used. And Richard may be able to
come. Just by way of information, fortunately those locks are well east of Port Citrus, so their status has no implication into the viability of our port. They don't lie between us and the Gulf of Mexico. So.
And same with the bridge.
They can stay in their current status and have no negative impact on them.
Comments have been made that ships can't go under the bridge. As you can see from the pictures, we don't intend to go underneath US 19. The port would be west of that.
Second question, since you mentioned US 19 and the bridge and the study area, it's a large part of the property is about one owner or two owners.
Yes, yes.
Have you got a feel for how they're
I will tell you this. If it's economically important to them, and I'm saying that carefully, if it makes plenty sense for them to get into this, I would assume they would like to develop the property. I can tell you the property to the north already has been approved for development. So that landowner would like to develop the property. It just hasn't been identified specifically as a port. So we designed it as a concept. But yes, the answer to your question is yes. And I will also tell you, now that we're in the game, there's been contacts by our staff with companies that want to come here. I know U.S. Gypsum has an arrangement at the Progress Energy site for taking the fly ash, which is actually a gypsum product, and storing it and shipping it. And they're very interested in using that site when the economy comes back for making wallboard. As you've said before, Plum Creek has contacted us. We've been contacted by other companies to potentially locate there. They're waiting till this study is done, and we start developing a lease agreement. So yes, there's been activity, commercial activity.
I'm just curious, I know you talked about this all 15 ports working good for the greater good. But what does a Citrus County Port Authority and a partnership with Marion County, from a marketing standpoint, where does that put you? And what are those dots as you see it that we need to connect? I mean, cut to it, let's fast forward 5-10 years from now, and you see a Citrus Marion County, what? I mean, where does that put us?
Well, and again, I don't want to speak for the study, but what I can envision is that any operation that you have at your current site, Maryland Port, if it requires or makes sense to have waterborne transportation, we should try to find a way to intermodally link between our two ports. There should be either a rail connection or a good road access between these ports. And if a company comes to your inland port and says, we're taking stuff from China, we don't have any way to get it here, we got to go through Tampa, we'd love to come here, I could see where they would come to Port Citrus or Manatee and come up to us and offload and bring it here, or vice versa. That's what I would say.
So I'll ask you, where do we go from this meeting today? What are the next steps?
Well, what I think we should do is when the feasibility study is done, and we're going to include your inland port in this study. We've met with your developer. It's going to be, our staff meets with the number one firm, we're going to say the words. And hopefully that study will try to prescribe what we should do as a governmental unit to work together. So we should be in constant contact, our staff should be in contact with your staffs. And when there's a blip on the radar screen that says inland port or you have somebody that's interested in us, we should be in direct communication to make sure we take advantage of that competitively. Now you have to understand the competitive advantage we have. It's a little old dinky port that's not too deep, but try to dig another canal in the state of Florida ever again. You're not ever going to get a moment like this again. That canal's been there for years. And you could never duplicate that again in today's situation. So, plus we have available land. All these other ports like Port Miami, they're struggling with the fact they're in the city. They don't have a lot of expansion capacities. Just to indicate their problems, we were down at a port meeting in Miami, Commissioner Meek and I were, and we were stuck in traffic with the container trucks in downtown Miami trying to offload those freighters. They were all in line trying to get on I-95. So you can see the problem some of these other ports have being in the middle of big cities. We don't have that problem here. We basically have a clean slate.
And Brad, I'm sorry, if I could also just kind of address that too, because we are early on, obviously, in this process, but one of the things that we hope to come out of today was just to make you aware of what we're doing, to make you aware that we're including the inland port and your concept into our feasibility study, and that at least, if nothing else, we could start a discussion with your staff as we move forward and hopefully have a favorable outcome of that feasibility study of working with you all and already having a relationship in the pipeline that you know what we're trying to do. And so if nothing else, is trying to open a line of communication today, and hopefully we'll bear some very positive fruit in the future for both of us.
One more thing, and again, I've been careful with this because you're going through the same thing with proprietary issues with companies that are looking to expand. You have to be careful about revealing their trade secrets. I can tell you this, the port development business is rather limited. There's not a lot of port developers. They know all the shippers. They know the manufacturers. They are all connected together. So just by having a port developer here trying to go through a market analysis of what this port looks like, they're in contact with these companies. And just like developing a mall, if you build a mall, you're going to want an anchor tenant there to help pay the bills. They know this. And we've had many of them looking at this property, and some actually in front of Richard and I have said, I don't think they know what they've got. I mean, that's a true statement from a man that looked at one of these sites. So I'm hoping that that is true. I really am.
I might add that I personally believe that in addition to this meeting being one of the information exchange, but it's also about developing relationships.
Yes.
when we negotiated the contract for Magnet. At that time, we were unaware of Port Citrus. We were unaware of their efforts to bring this port to the level at which they want to achieve it. And now we find out that we are 60 miles away from Waterport, 60 miles away, and we have a partner who wants to reach out to us and play together. And so we have an opportunity that is almost unlimited, and the possibilities have increased substantially. And so I see there's not only an information exchange, but developing that partnership.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. We are meeting with the Economic Development Council as well in January. We've met with the Marion County Manufacturers Association.
Yep. We've been to Levy County and met with them. We've been to Yankee Town in Inglis and met with them. And we're making the rounds. And let's just wait for the study to come back, and we'll stay in constant communication. We consider you to be good partners. And really, to be honest with you, we're looking to the north. Really, we've always looked to the south. Citrus County somehow has always been lumped into the Tampa Bay area, and we've got to look the other way. And I thought this was very interesting to kind of illustrate the fact that we were united by rail 100 years ago. So that's something I think is fairly impressive.
Thank you very much.
Happy to have the holiday. Everybody. Thank you so much.
The stage is still down in our workshop is open.